Late nights with Trav.
With Trav and Luz.
With Trav and Luz.
Late nights with Trav and Luz.
It's late. It's night. And it's a late night. No, okay, let me paint a real picture. The cantina is this little kind of, in Los's backyard, is basically four rotten posts of wood and a tin roof. Mm. And Los has decorated it with like almost Christmas lights, but they're more bulbous. What are those lights? Cantina lights. There's also starfish hanging from, and succulent plants and a nice barbecue grill.
That's right.
This is a place where in the summer you'll find us all hanging out.
That's right.
It's good.
So I'm excited to talk to you about another topic tonight.
Uh-huh.
And this one's going to be more practical. This is going to be more about product design.
Okay,
and,
cool.
And it's going to be something that you may not learn in school that is a take on like what is a successful framework to build a product.
All right, I'm excited about this.
Right. Okay. Yeah. So, I'm going to talk to you about this framework, and it'll help you focus on creating the right content.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. This framework can be used so that you can define the problem and need. So that's defined and understood. So you can find the value to like a customer segment. So that's defined and understood. So you set the right goals. So there's enough success criteria defined, and then so that you can have a high level ideas for a solution. Now I'm coming at this from a product point of view.
What?
I'm laughing at the cat.
The cat is totally there.
So so we should give it a name. Catty McCatcat.
Catty McCatface.
Catty McCatface. There you go. So Catty McCatface is here for another night. So it's late nights with Travon Lowe and Catty McCatface. So the point of view that I'm coming at this to you guys is from a product point of view. However, this can be used for anything, mm-hmm. like creating a podcast or any content that you want to create, any creative endeavor that you're going to share to an audience.
Yeah.
This can be used. And what it's called is called an experience canvas.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So in preparation, you're going to need to set apart about 2 hours of time, okay? It's 15 minutes to set up, 90 minutes for your experience canvas session, and 15 minutes to take photos and clean up.
Okay. Okay. What's the desired outcome of doing this exercise? Why would you do this?
So the desired outcome is to get alignment with your team.
Okay.
Or to get a clear understanding for what your problem is and mm-hmm. what your hypothesis okay. is. And like define who you're creating for, right?
Because if you're working without a definition of who is your audience mm-hmm. and exactly what the problem is, it's going to be a lot harder to find a great solution.
That's right.
And so this will help you clearly define and map out in your mind and communicate to others what those problems are, who the audience is, what the advantages are, what the vacuums in the space are, mm-hmm. you know, like what unique values you can provide.
Mm-hmm.
This maps that all very clearly.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so we're going to break this down into 10 steps, okay? The first thing is you're going to warm up. You're going to take 5 minutes and you're going to welcome your team to the workshop, and you're going to read out like a rules of engagement. Do you know what that means?
This is like if you're facilitating?
Mm-hmm.
A rules of engagement?
Mm-hmm.
Generally I do, but like, is there some specific ones that would be different here?
No.
Generally they're just like, hey, everybody, we're here as a team. So no bad ideas and no judging each other, this kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah. So you'll put together like a list of like...
Not saying don't have any bad ideas, like say don't...
There aren't any bad
there
ideas.
There are no mm-hmm. bad ideas, yeah.
Yep. You're going to set up a... this is from the lens of you facilitating.
Okay.
Right. So the second thing, and as we move forward, you want to time box everything within 90 minutes,
uh-huh.
right? The time constraint forces you to not get into high fidelity solutions or
right.
get you thinking about maybe this is a bad idea and I'm not going to say it.
What's the danger of that?
The danger of that is that to get to a good idea at times, you have to stand on a pile of bad ideas. I think that's your metaphor.
I like it. I like it. I think I'll use that.
So like there may be a good idea that's like 6 degrees of separation from the first bad idea.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
You need to get through the bad ideas, right?
Right, yeah, yeah.
You need to connect
absolutely
A to D and to C to B to get to F.
We did this experiment once where we were doing like ideation.
Mm-hmm.
And I was shutting you down each time.
Oh, right.
Do you remember this?
I remember this.
This podcast was called, I think, Discover and Make a Framework for Creativity or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And in that podcast episode, you and I did this exercise where I was asking you to come up with creative ideas. And each time I was going, yeah, but, and then giving a reason why it was not probably the best idea. What that does, aside from just kind of not generate good ideas, what that does is it sucks the energy right out of the room.
Right.
Right?
Right.
So when we say there's no bad ideas, of course there's actually bad ideas.
Right.
But you want to approach it as if there is none, because you have to wade through these bad ideas to get to the gold.
Yeah.
And if you address bad ideas as such, it's going to block you from getting to the gold.
Yes. So step two.
Yeah.
You ready?
I am very ready.
Step two is you're going to frame the problem.
Uh-huh.
Okay. This is a 10-minute exercise.
Hmm.
And you're going to explain to the group that you are about to attempt to frame the problem from as many different angles as possible, and that to do so rapidly and accurately is the goal.
Okay.
Okay. So everyone's going to brainstorm individually for 5 minutes and just jot their things down on post-it notes, right? And what they're going to write is that they're going to try to clearly list challenges, issues, any analytics, any known facts or assumptions,
mm-hmm.
right? You're going to write them all on a sticky, and then after 5 minutes are up, you're going to say, okay, put them up on the board under this problem.
Uh-huh.
And then you as a facilitator will group them out.
Yep, yep.
And then this will be the trigger for the hypothesis, right?
That's great.
Okay. So the third step is you're going to identify the hypothesis.
This is the hypothesis.
Right.
Can you define what a hypothesis is in this situation?
Yeah, in this situation, it's a framework that follows this. We think that blank, blank, blank will have the following effect. Blank, blank, blank.
We think that this thing will have the following effect.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and the thing is your solution.
Your solution.
Okay.
And so the effect is the desired
money.
Outcome.
No? Yeah. Okay.
It's always money.
Money!
No. So when you so you want to identify the hypothesis. This is step three. It takes 10 minutes. You're going to ask the group what it is you're trying to learn and work together to write it in the form that I said.
Mm-hmm.
We believe that
yep.
blank will produce the following effect.
Mm-hmm.
Now, after running a few of these, the more specific you can get, the better the hypothesis is.
Yeah. And what's so great about this ad lib form,
mm-hmm.
an ad lib is where you have a structured sentence and you're just filling things in.
Mm-hmm.
We believe that blank will give us blank.
Mm-hmm.
What's so great about that is that it forces you to think out your idea.
Yeah.
It forces you to say, okay, does this actually conform to an actual hypothesis, or is this just a wild idea that I've been entertaining a while that I think I'm trying to force into this conversation?
That
happens a lot, right? You're like, oh, you know what would be cool? And then like a week later, like, I got a great idea that I just had, but it's actually, you've been like babysitting it for a while.
Yeah.
But this Mad Lib. Did I say ad lib before?
You said ad lib.
This Mad Lib approach forces you to look at your solution and mm-hmm. say, does this actually work into the framework or the paradigm that we're espousing here?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I like that.
And it's free.
It's free.
This is a free podcast.
Here's what's hard about a hypothesis. You have 10 minutes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
you can go down a rabbit hole,
mm-hmm.
right? And so as a facilitator, you need to keep track of time and
right.
facilitate that time.
Yeah.
Because I've gotten in and stuck in like after 10 minutes is up and the timer goes off, you're like, okay, we'll come back to this. And what that allows you to do is understand this. If it took you 10 minutes to struggle to find a hypothesis, that means that your team or yourself haven't clearly aligned on what you're going to solve.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Right, which is good. Like the point of this is to uncover the tough friction points that everyone has.
You know, I'm gonna give you a real quick little productivity tip here.
Go for it.
I'm just gonna give you a little productivity tip.
Go on.
I'm gonna remind you that this is a free podcast.
All right, this is a free podcast.
I happen to know a few things about Google.
Oh,
because. I'm there all the time.
Oh, yeah. Is that right?
You can Google something like 5-minute timer.
Okay.
And there's a timer in Google.
Of course there is.
Yeah, it's just built in. So you just you don't have to like go to a website or open the app or something. You just Google 5-minute timer, 6-minute timer. So you're like, this is going to be 10 minutes. Just Google 10-minute timer. And then you press start. And it's just like it's inside of the search result page.
That's really cool.
It's fun, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
It's fun.
That's what we do. Like if we have these sessions,
right.
We're just like, because your browser is probably already on the projector.
Right.
So we just like Google 5-minute timer.
That's good.
And then you can press full screen and it's just like this big five counting down like over like, you know, like Big Brother over everybody's head counting down until their doom.
That's really good.
Yeah.
That's really cool.
It's a good little tip.
It's a good tip.
Thank you.
I like that.
Yeah.
It's free. Podcast. What's cool about the hypothesis and this entire experience canvas is if the time isn't enough and you don't get a clear... You don't clearly fill out the box.
You're always struggling, man. That's what's good about it. It's like a game.
It's a game. It means you need to spend more time there. It shows you the pain point.
Mm.
Right?
Yeah, that's interesting. I like that idea. The time crunch will show you where you haven't thought things out.
Where your team is weak or where the idea is weak.
That's cool.
Which allows you to think through it more.
That's good insight.
Now, when you look at this experience canvas that's linked, the boxes are different sizes.
Uh-huh.
You have rectangles that are large, small rectangles, small squares.
Mm-hmm.
And the size of the rectangle dictates how much effort it should take to fill it in.
Oh, okay.
Okay. That's also a nice insight to know when looking at this. Okay. So you're done with the hypothesis, right? And now you're getting to the groove of this, like timing and moving fast, right?
Yes.
The fourth thing you're going to do is you're going to list the personas and roles, okay?
Of
who the hypothesis is targeting.
Okay.
Okay.
So the user.
The user. This is a 5-minute exercise. In this exercise, you're going to ask the team to call out who they are solving the problem for and write them up in the persona box, which is the little section here.
Right.
Right. If you don't have any personas that are like created by your company or by yourself, like this will be a forcing function.
You have
to get that going.
Now, what's the benefit of having a persona to work for?
Having a benefit of persona is when you start doing user testing
mm-hmm.
and you're testing this, you have already thought about this person holistically.
Yeah.
And you're solving for them. And so when you're looking to test your hypothesis and your assumptions, you have someone that you can find to solve it. What's your answer to that?
Yeah, I think what it does is it gives you a quick gut check. It enables you to have a quick gut check as you develop things. Like if I've defined my persona, let's say, remember early Pinterest?
Mm-hmm.
They had a very specific persona they were going after.
Right.
They were going after mainly females, mainly between the ages of, you know, like 18 to 30.
Okay.
And a little bit more affluent, shopping based, you know, and they had this persona, and it, and the nice thing for them about having it was that it let them say, okay, we don't care about males.
Yeah.
We do not care about action sports. We do not care about beers or, you know, like, or sports cars or whatever guys are into. And therefore, we can cancel out a lot of avenues that we're going to waste time with. So a persona does a few things. It helps you design and create for somebody, but it also helps you to cancel out bad ideas, like to chase.
Yeah.
Just narrow down your work.
Yeah, I like that a lot. It makes it clear
mm-hmm.
on like what you need to do moving forward.
And sometimes you give a persona a name.
Mm-hmm.
Like this is like Susan, and you define what kind of person Susan is. And then it gives the team language.
That's right.
And we've done this before where you're like, okay, I know that Susan has these attributes, mm-hmm. you know, like she's a social media person. Mm-hmm. She's really good with Twitter, but not great with, you know, like maybe like more powerful things like QuickBooks or something.
Right, right.
Right. So when you're designing, you're thinking, this is my design, and then when in a critique session you say, so how do you think Susan would approach something like this?
Yeah,
and everybody has the same language. We all know who Susan is and what her attributes are.
Yeah, and this is called an experience canvas because you're trying to build out the best experience for mm-hmm. a customer.
Yeah, we're designing for Susan, not mm-hmm. for Mark, who
for Susan's experience.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Super cool. I like talking this with you because you have different insights on how to.
Mm-hmm.
How to do this, which is cool.
Yeah, we've both used this.
Yeah.
It seems in different ways, so this is pretty nice.
Yeah, it's cool to see that. if 5 minutes isn't enough time, you're going to have a separate session to flesh out the personas.
Yeah.
Right? Because it could take a lot of time, and it should take.
Yeah, and you're going to have more than one.
That's right. That's right. So you are going to have more than one, and for the majority, for the 80% rule with an experience canvas, you don't want to have more than two as a best practice.
As two personas?
Two personas.
Okay.
Right? Because it helps you narrow down with your Pinterest.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Because Pinterest could have had five personas.
Yeah. The more narrow it is, the easier it is to design for that one person.
Right. So a best practice is to keep it two max.
I like that.
Right. It forces you to have.
I've been in groups that have suffered from having seven or six.
Yeah. It forces you to have an opinion.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. It kind of like, yeah. Now that I'm looking back on it, I'm like, you know what the creators of those personas were doing? They were like saying, well, what else?
Yeah.
You know, and they're just like, they're like broadening the scope.
Yeah, yeah.
But in order to get a really defined solution, you have to narrow the scope.
That's right. That's right. Now, number five is only done if the team has like decision makers.
Okay.
Right. So if it's you and your buddy, like it's whatever.
I'm a decision maker, son.
If it's you and seven other people, eight people on a team.
Yeah.
This one's this is number five. You want to list all stakeholders and team members. It's a 5 minute exercise.
You list them,
right? Yeah. You list them. You list who's the decision maker.
Yeah, yeah.
Who makes the decisions?
Yeah, yeah.
Who is an approver?
Uh huh.
Who is like a creator of it, and who is informed?
Uh huh.
Right. So it's kind of like you define the roles of stakeholders.
Why is that important?
It's important because a project can stall if there is not a clear owner.
Right.
A project can stall if there are no clear creators.
Yep.
A project can stall if the wrong people are informed or not informed at all,
mm-hmm.
too early or too late.
Mm-hmm. I had a tweet a few weeks ago. Somebody said, hey, Travis, do you think that I should start with Photoshop, or should I just start building in the browser?
Right.
And I said, ideally, you want to identify your stakeholders and your ideal customer and the best solution.
Yeah.
so you want to use Lois's map. You should listen to this episode, episode 68.
Yeah. Episode 68.
Don't start designing in Photoshop. And listen to episode 68.
And I'll link to some blog posts that kind of like walk you through it in more detail. This is like our take on it.
That'll be
great. Right.
In the show notes, there's blog posts.
There'll be a blog post link.
Fantastic.
Yeah, right. Okay. So number six is you want to assess the value of this piece of work, right? This is 15 minutes. Okay. And what
value? This is so good.
Right, and what this is like, what is the likely user benefit and business benefit, right?
For the company, for you.
The company, yeah. What are expected user gains? What is the monetary business benefit? What are technical benefits? You can do some competitor analysis here. Expected analytics that are going to change, right? And the goal of finding out the value is there's this framework that's called jobs to be done,
mm-hmm.
right? And the goal of jobs to be done, right, is a way to think about of products. Like, for example, what is the job to be done of this microphone?
Okay.
Right?
It's to pick up sound and translate it into meaningful data bits for the computer so we can send this message to our listeners.
Yep. Okay. What is the job to be done of, like, a chair?
Uh-huh.
Right. And so the value helps you get to the job to be done, right?
Got it.
And the way that I've worked on this value work is to work with a value proposition statement, right?
Yes.
And the way that this works is you draw a target, like a bullseye. Okay.
Uh-huh.
On the outside, you write features. Okay. And then you go with your team, you're like, okay, let's talk about the features. Post up what the features of this will be like.
Okay.
And then in the circle on the inside, you talk about, so what are the benefits of these features?
Okay.
Okay. And once you're done with the benefits and the bullseye, you're going to talk about what is the value.
Value.
Right? So you go, features create benefits and benefits create value.
Interesting.
Right? And so when you talk about a benefit, you ask this question, which is like a gut check.
Now
so
these,
what?
These,
so what?
These features and benefits or values are in the user's perspective.
Yes. The user's perspective.
Okay.
Right? And so what you get to is the value to the user.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
Which is like what motivates them to like be a human, really. And like you tap into these motivational aspects of of humanity,
right?
And when you tap into that, like, I want, we're going to make them successful,
mm-hmm.
Accomplished,
mm-hmm.
happy.
We did this a long time ago when I was working at this advertising agency.
Right.
We had to come up with a few campaigns for this client, and I got my designers together and I said, okay, so these are the Maslow's
hierarchy of needs.
Okay, mm-hmm. So we have survival,
mm-hmm.
and we have love, and we have the need to be important.
That's right.
And we have variety.
Mm-hmm.
Let's make a design direction for each of these needs.
Oh, that's cool.
And it was cool, like, because the way it ended up, like, you know, like, let's say, I forget who the client was, but like, let's say it was a hotel. I was in Vegas at the time, so a lot of our clients were hotels.
Right.
And so, like, how does a hotel make an ad based on survival?
Mm.
Well, it's a hotel, so it's kind of easy. You talk about, like, come out of the rain, come into our nice, warm, cozy hotel,
right?
And we're gonna feed you, and we're gonna not clothe you, but we're gonna get you a nice, warm bed.
Right,
that's survival. But how does a hotel show you variety?
Mm.
Oh, we have all these different rooms. We have these different offerings.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have like whatever you need. How do they show? What's the other one? Importance.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we have the Grand Royal Suite. And there's different spins you can do for everything based on these needs. And when you're looking at, you know, what is the value for the customer? Which of those itches is it scratching?
Right. That's a great insight. And what you derive is a solid statement of value.
Uh-huh.
Right. So that takes 10 minutes mm-hmm. to get to that point.
Mm-hmm.
And then you brainstorm values as metrics. This should take five minutes.
As metrics.
Yeah. You remove everything that can't be measured and group and rank them as a team.
Huh.
Because you want to have quantitative and qualitative feedback.
Are you deciding what value is most important? Is that what you're doing?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And a way to, like, sift through that is to, anything that can't be measured, you're not going to test.
Interesting.
Right?
Yeah, we want things you can measure.
You want things that you can measure because you want your design to be informed qualitatively and quantitatively.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
All right, so that's number six. You assess the value of the piece of work. Now, number seven, this is all getting, like, shared understanding of what the problem is, the hypothesis,
totally.
We're the clear owners, and like the team, and then the value, and like now the next step was when you start to explore solutions.
Okay.
So it's taken a long time to explore solutions.
Yeah, but everybody in the room has a very clear picture of what we're talking about.
That's right. So when we get to exploring solutions, it should be clear. Right?
Yeah.
And what's cool is that this gives you a framework to, like, settle and calm your ideas, because you tend to be buzzing around in your head.
Uh-huh.
Right?
Uh-huh.
And as creatives, we want to be makers and go and create.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so exploring possible solutions is a 30-minute exercise. It's 2 15-minute exercises.
Uh-huh.
Okay? You're going to ask the team to explore possible solutions. And now you do this less to get a perfect solution and more so that you can be sure of what needs to be in the MVE, minimum viable experience.
Oh, okay.
Okay. You split into teams, into pairs, into two groups, whatever it is, depending on how many people you have in your room. And you ask them to create an end-to-end user journey on, like, a sheet of paper.
Yeah.
Right? Or on a wall using pens or post-it notes. And you want to draw very crude screens at each touch point.
Uh-huh.
Right? And what we mean by this is how I do it. I grab a normal sheet of paper. I fold it so that I have 8 squares.
Yeah.
Right? And I use a Sharpie, a thick Sharpie. And the reason I use a thick Sharpie, it forces me to not get detailed.
Uh-huh.
Right?
Uh-huh.
And what I do is I draw a customer journey for each touch point. How do they hear about this product?
Mm.
What is their first touch point when they get to the product? Like, what does it look like in an app store if it is like a mobile app or whatever, right?
Okay.
So you, like, think through the customer journey and what their experience is at a high level.
Do you have like a list of each of those things that you draw out? Or, I mean, is it the same for every?
No. This is, you're exploring possible solutions so the team can drill into, like, uh-huh. this is what it's like in product.
Uh-huh.
This is what it's like listening to a podcast.
Right.
Or it could be like, how does a random listener get a see Travelos? Do they see a sticker on a laptop?
Right. Okay. Right?
And so it's you can explore possible solutions and the full spectrum of the customer journey.
Got
right?
it.
And end to end is the goal, and you'll end up piecing that together from everyone. Right.
Yeah, I usually find that when you're writing out a journey, you're focusing on one, like exactly that, one person's journey through. And you know what's interesting? When it comes to software, we know that like it's an 80-20 split, right? 80-20 or 80% of the people only use 20% of the product
right.
at any given time. And that means that like if you're following someone's average journey, there's a lot that they're not going to touch.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're not going to touch the settings. They're not going to touch the profile, like upload your photo
right.
on their, you know, whatever.
Right.
But what you're doing is you're following them through the critical path.
Right.
Which is where you need to spend most of your time mm-hmm. to prove your ideas.
Mm-hmm. So we have three more. Number eight.
Okay.
You're going to determine the minimum viable experience here. It takes 10 minutes, and you facilitate consensus of what would be the absolute minimum necessary for an experience, a product, or a service that is usable, useful, and delightful in some way.
Uh-huh.
Okay. All right, number nine, and that previous one was 10 minutes. Number nine is you're going to identify the prototype and test process. So for 5 minutes, you're going to gain consensus on the scope, what fidelity and complexity you want the prototype to be to ship the MVE so that you're able to test the hypothesis as quickly as possible.
Yeah.
Like, what would you learn if the hypothesis tested true? What would you learn if it tested false? So the last one is you want to identify next steps, and you take 5 minutes to document and delegate the steps across your team so that you can meet back up after testing, and you're going to ask the questions like, what are we going to do with this material
mm-hmm.
once we get it? So that's the experience canvas. And I've run a few, and it's been super insightful
yeah.
and clear, and it has helped many ideas, many creatives get on the same page and get to a point where we can build something.
So crucial.
Mm.
If you're going to build a product, you need to have everybody on the team building the same product.
Right.
I'm actually going through a situation right now where all of the stakeholders are not aligned.
Mm.
And it's weird because as a designer who's new to the team,
right.
I can see that there's this chasm mm. between the way that different people think. And all of their thoughts are valid. It's just that they're not thinking the same way.
Yeah.
And I feel like because I see it, I have to say something. But as well, I don't feel a lot of ownership over it. So
right.
But so this is interesting. I mean, I think there's a lot of principles that could really help out here.
Yeah, and it's hard. Like it's. Here's one thing that I've learned. Like it's your job whenever you start a project to make sure that this gets done.
Really?
Like I've made it my job that if this doesn't happen, like I try to at least clearly define the stakeholders and team members.
Yeah.
Right.
Sure.
And get a consensus and like, all right, who's making the final decision?
Yeah.
Right? Who needs to be informed?
Uh-huh.
Right? And then who is driving this project? Who are the people that are going to make it happen and synthesize all the feedback and make the final, like, design and development direction?
So important.
Yeah.
It's just not a good feeling to be involved with a project that you feel does not have a captain.
That's right.
You know?
So if you've experienced this, or it's your first time, or you're getting out of school, or you're in a project at school, give the experience canvas a shot. It takes some time, and you can read up on the blog that I'm going to post along in the show notes
yeah.
as a way to like understand this more. And it's a pretty good framework that you can run. It's kind of like it runs itself.
Yeah, this one, comparing this one to the other one we did about the creative framework,
yeah,
the one that I mentioned before, mm-hmm. this one's a lot more detailed.
It is detailed.
So the one that I outlined before is more of like a big, broad brush, mm-hmm. is like overall principles.
Mm-hmm.
This one follows the same pattern, but with a lot more prescription.
Mm-hmm.
And so if it depends on what kind of person you are. Like if you're a person who would benefit from somebody holding your hand a little bit more, this is great.
Mm-hmm.
This really is.
That's right. So we have a few reviews.
Oh, yeah, we do. You know we do, man. I don't know why I talk like that. Okay, the first one is from Janoy Vasil, who I hope I say your name right, my friend. And this one is from what is this from? This is from the Jamaican podcast. This is from the Jamaican iTunes store.
Okay.
Janoy says, the title is Thought-Provoking and Entertaining. Every time I listen to this podcast, there is always a takeaway, whether it be a soft skill, I'm trying to scroll here, or exposing you to different ideas and concepts such as the full process designer. Classic. These guys are hilarious, and you are sure to have a good laugh every episode. That's awesome, Janoy. Thank you very much for writing that that review in the Jamaican store, man.
The Jamaican man. Hope we're not.
You know I'm going to write in the Jamaican store, man. Is that very good?
That was pretty good.
Oh, okay, I'm not very good at
that was pretty good.
Accents.
This next one is from Russia. It's awesome. It's titled Awesome Isn't Good Enough. 5 stars.
Whoa.
By Anton K52.
Awesome Isn't Good Enough?
Mm.
That's intense.
Left on the 20th of February, 2015.
Okay. Read it to me. Serenade me with this.
And he says,
actually, can you rap it? Can you? I'm going to lay a fresh beat and you can rap
right,
this
here
review.
We go.
Here we go.
Yo, check it. It is amazing how both of you make it easily applicable suggestions and tips that can be immediately implemented in your daily routine. Excited for the future podcast and great times listening to your discussions. Cushions.
That was so fresh.
I'm not a rapper.
I don't even need to take a shower. That was so fresh. I'm good for the next day.
So, Anton, thank you for that. And we took creative liberty in your review.
That was awesome, man. I'm impressed. You made it sound good. Even though it didn't rhyme, you made it sound like it was like, you know, the rhythm.
I gave it a shot.
I liked it.
And then we have two other ones from the Indian store.
Is that 4 reviews in one day?
That is 4 in 1 dizzle.
This is a load of reviews.
This is a load of reviews.
I'll read one and you read one.
All right, go for it.
All right, let me just scoot this laptop over. All right, this is from the Indian store, from Ratik96. The title is, I love you guys. Hey, Trav. Hey, Los. Good morning.
Winky face.
Late Nights with Trav and Los is my favorite podcast. It's got 2 delightful hosts, thoughtful podcast topics, and music that just brings it all together. Listening to Trav and Lowe's huddled up around microphones at ungodly hours in the cantina talking about all things design is an experience. There was an ellipsis.
You did it.
And it's one I want to continue having. Keep up the good work. Hugs, Ratik Sharma. That was a good one.
That was a really good one.
I like it.
Thank you.
I like how people are like, they know exactly what it looks like, and it's a podcast. Like, they know what it feels like to be here.
Yeah, that's
awesome.
Good. That's good.
That means we invite them in really well.
Good. That's the
I
goal.
Like it. Yeah, yeah.
That's the goal. We're inviting them super well with the cat.
Oh, Catty McCatface?
Catty McCatface. all right, here's the last one. It says, awesome podcast, 5 stars. And it was left by Akshay Naik 404. It was left on the 7th of March this year, 2016. The previous one was January 27th.
This is the Indian store. That's why it took a while for us to get it.
That is true.
I didn't know it existed.
And this one says, I started from podcast number 1. Started from the bottom. Now we're here.
Yep.
Started from the bottom. Now we're
and
going all the way up to the top. Started from podcast number 1 and going all the way to the top.
Well, now we're at the top.
Loving every bit of it. The topics discussed in this podcast resonate so much with me. Thanks, guys.
You know, I've never been to India.
You know what?
What?
I haven't either.
I did some design work that would impact people that live in India.
Ooh.
Recently. I can't talk much about it, but it's very exciting. And the thing that I kind of am gathering, the thing that I'm noticing is I have no idea what it's like to live in India.
No clue.
No clue whatsoever. Mm. And I just love it that these two people, even though, right, even though our shared experience may be even pretty small or maybe very large. I have no idea what it's like to live in India. At least, you know, they feel a part of this.
Yeah.
And that, I love that.
It was really cool.
Yeah.
It's really cool. I tangentially related. I was at an internal design week at Atlassian in Australia.
And oh, Mike, get out. No, no, what is it called?
How you going, Mike?
How you going, Mike?
How you going, Mike?
How you going, Mike?
And there's a presentation about designing for the customer.
Okay.
Right? And there's a shirt that says, that someone wore, and it says, I am not the target customer.
Oh, yeah.
Right? And it's like, that's step out of your shoes.
Hipster.
Don't design for yourself. Yeah. So that wraps up this practical episode.
It's very practical.
Very practical. And we don't do these that often.
Not really.
Yeah.
We do sometimes. Yeah. Mostly they're you.
Mostly they are me.
Yeah, mostly you host the
ones. How to Brainstorm was there's two of those, right?
Uh-huh.
So
you're a practical kind of guy.
I am practical. So I'm hoping that you can take this. If you're a chiropractor, you can lead a team. You know? This isn't only to designers.
In the
traditional sense.
Yeah, like this, what is it called now? The canvas, what is it called?
Experience canvas.
The experience canvas. I mean, you can take it and say, sure, we're talking about product design. Mm. But let's think about this. Can it work for a marketing campaign?
Right.
Can it work for building out a website?
Mm-hmm.
Can it work for creating a talk?
Mm-hmm.
You know, like writing a talk? Can it work for all these different things? Like it, what it boils down to is understanding, having empathy, and communicating that to everybody in the room.
Mm.
These are like life skills, man.
Life skills.
Life skills.
So you can follow us on Twitter at Trav and Los. You can follow us on Instagram at Trav and Los. Hey, we have a website, travandlos.com. And guess what? Our email?
travandlos@gmail.com. It's pretty easy. Once you know the keywords, Trav and Los, you kind of got it all.
Yeah, so thank you so much for listening, and I hope that you use this. It's practical, and tweet us if you've had success with it, or it's been complicated or whatever.
Yeah. Good night.